Who else could coax the blues right out of the horn or charm the husk right off of the corn? No one but Auntie Mame, one of the most popular heroines in the popular and literary culture of the 20th century. A recent book, But Darling, I'm Your Auntie Mame, tells the history of how one outrageous, larger-than-life, and but extraordinarily human fictional character became the basis of two novels, two stage productions, a play and a musical, and two subsequent film adaptations with more to come. On the line now from his home in Los Angeles, California, is the author, Richard Tyler Jordan, who is also a senior publicist with the Walt Disney Company. His book, But Darling, I'm Your Auntie Mame, is published by Kensington. Welcome to thecommentary.ca, Richard Tyler Jordan. Good evening, Mr. Jordan.
Hello, Joseph.
First of all, I want to ask, what compelled you to write a book about what is another book?
Well, actually, I was incredibly overwhelmed by how popular the Mame character has been for the past 50 years, well, nearly 50 years. Just to give you a little background, back in 1955, Patrick Dennis published his novel, Auntie Mame, and it immediately shot to the top of the New York Times bestsellers list, where it remained for, 122 weeks, I believe, which is over 2 years.
So sort of like the Da Vinci Code?
Exactly. Although the Da Vinci Code hasn't even been there, I think it's been like 75 weeks or so for that book, but it was a must-read at that time, just as Da Vinci is today. And then the following year, for Broadway, Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee adapted the novel for a play starring Rosalind Russell, and it became a huge hit, a big monumental hit on Broadway. And the following year, Warner Brothers adapted yet another incarnation with Ross Russell, and that film was a mega hit, saving the studio from bankruptcy, pretty much. And then, flash forward 10 years later, Jerome Lawrence, Robert E. Lee, and Jerry Herman took the character and again adapted her for a musical, Mame, which starred Angela Lansbury and Bea Arthur. In fact, they both won Tonys for their respective roles. And then in 1974, it was adapted again for the screen as a musical starring Lucille Ball. So I was really very fascinated with just the history of this character and why she was so beloved by audiences and readers of all ages around the world.
Is there another character that I guess some people who are more familiar with, that could be equated as the same as how popular Auntie Mame is?
Oh, that's a good question.
Mama Rose from Gypsy, perhaps?
Yeah, perhaps Gypsy, yeah. Certainly that she's... but she hasn't had nearly as many incarnations as Mame. I mean, you can think of, like, Scarlett O'Hara, even. First she was a heroine in the best-selling novel Gone with the Wind, and then for the screen, and also in a Broadway play. But nothing like our Auntie Mame.
What... For people who are not familiar with either the movie, either the movie or the musicals, what is the genesis of the Mame character? What makes her so beloved?
Personally, I think what most people see in Mame is possibility. They see this bright and articulate and campy and fun-loving, adventurous person who is, she may be very hedonistic, but she's also totally egalitarian, I think. And people identify with her. They would like to know someone like her, or they would like to be Mame herself. She sums up her philosophy of life in that one famous phrase, life is a banquet and most poor sons of bitches are starving to death. So this is a character that has a great joie de vivre, and I think we all would like to be, or at least have some aspect of Mame in our own personalities.
Now, the author was Patrick Dennis, but I never knew this until I read your book, that he was someone other than Patrick Dennis. He was Edward Everett Tanner III.
Correct. His real name was, as you said, Edward Everett Tanner III, a name he did not like. And he chose Patrick Dennis as a pseudonym for most of his novels. He got the name out of the New York Times telephone directory.
Really?
Or so he said.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess he wrote other novels besides Auntie Mame?
Yeah, I believe there were 16. Auntie Mame was, of course, his most popular, but there was a sequel as well called Around the World with Auntie Mame, which also was a bestseller. It never had the same impact that the original did, but it was It's very funny. In fact, it's recently been reissued. It includes a chapter that at the time had been taken out. It was a chapter in which Mame goes to Russia. And, of course, at that time, anyone dealing with Russia was considered a communist. So back in the 50s, when that book was first published, they excised that chapter, and it has since been put back in.
Now, he was I guess the character, the nephew in the play was named Patrick Dennis, and I guess that came from putting himself into the play, I guess, is that?
Yeah, absolutely. He always, Patrick Dennis, or Edward Tanner, was an observer. He stood on the sidelines and watched as life went on around him, and that's what he chronicled. And therefore, Patrick, his alter ego, was the same way. Patrick Dennis, in both the novel and in stage and film productions, is someone who is sort of watching this madcap world go on around him, and suddenly he is absorbed in that circle. But basically, he's watching what's going on and chronicling all of these wacky things that this aunt of his is up to.
Now, was there a real aunt that
as
a Mame Dennis in his life?
As a matter of fact, yes, there was. Now, Patrick Dennis always denied this. Whenever someone would say, "Who's the real Auntie Mame?" he would usually turn to himself and say, "It was me." However, when I spoke to his widow, Louise Tanner, she said, "No, there really was a wacky aunt. Her name was Aunt Marion, and she was she was something else. She was once paid $5 to jump off a cliff in the Perils of Pauline movie. She also had a beautiful home on Bank Street that she would open up to transients, really. I mean, unwed mothers, anyone who was on the street was welcomed into her home. But she was also not good with money and was unable to keep up the mortgage payments and lost the house.
And this is the one that you talk about that dies in relative poverty and anonymity?
Yes, indeed. She ultimately ended up living in a cardboard box in streets of New York for a while, and ultimately she was in a retirement home, but totally destitute. And Patrick Dennis, or Edward Tanner, attempted to help her several times. I know he got a lot of flack during his lifetime, saying that he didn't help her enough, but I think he really did. He tried his best, but she was she just couldn't be bothered with the day-to-day finances of regular life.
Now, what I found interesting, there's a chapter in the book where you talk about what happened after the success of the two novels to Edward Everett Tanner, and how he became a butler?
This was one of the most fascinating revelations that I uncovered during my research. Yeah, after writing Auntie Mame and 16 subsequent novels, he just totally left New York and became a major domo in the home of several very prominent people, including Joan and Ray Kroc.
That's McDonald's people.
McDonald's founders. And it was something that he actually enjoyed doing. His son, Michael Tanner, who was very gracious to me when I was researching this, actually brought me correspondence from his dad during that time. And one of the letters implored his son to please not tell anyone what he was doing. He was so afraid that his employers would think that he was there to spy on them and to make fun of them in a new book, which was not the case at all. He just needed a change of life, a change of venue for his life. And he was quite good at being a major domo, apparently.
It's an amazing story.
Yes.
We talked about the success of the novel, how it equates to today's, I guess it'd be, as you said, a sort of Da Vinci Code for... Mm-hmm. How did that, I guess automatically when it became a success, they said, let's turn it into a Broadway play?
Yeah, pretty much. Robert Fryer and Lawrence Carr are the two producers. They had previously done a play called The Desk Set on Broadway, and they also produced Rosalind Russell's debut on Broadway called Wonderful Town, which of course is on Broadway again.
With Donna Murphy, right?
I'm sorry?
With Donna Murphy?
Yes, exactly. Which I haven't seen, but I certainly want to. But they read a review of the book in the New York Times and immediately bought the rights to it and went to Roz and suggested that she perform this character. And curiously enough, in her autobiography, Life is a Banquet, Roz Russell claims that she bought the rights to play, or to the book, I should say. So that was completely false. So it was Fryer and Carr who went to her, and although she expressed reluctance, she was really quite eager to do this.
Obviously when a play's successful on Broadway, they want to make a Hollywood movie out of that. Mm-hmm. Rosalind Russell was involved in producing that film, was she? Or?
Well, she was one of the backers of the play, actually. She owned a percentage of the
play. I see, okay.
And it was at first considered that maybe Eve Arden should play Auntie Mame in the film. Eve Arden was a Warner Brothers talent, and she was considered for the role, but ultimately, thank goodness, Roz Russell was selected.
Right. And how long was it after the film's success that they said, well, let's put it to music and let's make a musical out of this?
Well, the musical was, that was 1966, so it was about a decade. In fact, I believe Jerome Lawrence once said to me that they got out their contracts to see, when their option would lapse on the property, and found that it was like 48 hours away.
Really?
And so they quickly renegotiated and went to Jerry Herman, who at the time was really, really hot on Broadway. He had just done Hello, Dolly, which was a huge hit, and they asked if he would consider writing the music for Mame.
No, I read your book, but I don't remember if I've read... Was Rosalind Russell ever considered for the musical?
Yeah, she was, but that was territory she had already covered, she said. And I think she would have been good. She'd done
the Wonderful Town, as you said, and then Gypsy.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that she could have done it. But thank goodness they got Angela Lansbury. But that, again, was quite a difficult task. Angela had to audition four times. Finally, she just gave up, and she said, look, you either want me or you don't. I've come out here to New York and auditioned for you all these times, and I'm going back to California, so tell me right now, do you want me for this role or not? And they finally gave in and said yes. And of course, she just became... Any thought of Roz Russell portraying the character was in the past. She completely owned that character.
See, this is hard for me because I'm relatively young, and I don't think there is a film version with Angela Lansbury in it, is there?
No, and there certainly should have been.
Right, and so you really think that it's a Rosalind Russell part, and we all know Angela Lansbury in a contemporary sense through Murder, She Wrote, or Beauty and the Beast. How did she fill the role of Mame?
Well, it's curious. She was a big surprise, quite honestly, to almost everyone. She had done one previous musical. It was... Anyone Can Whistle, this Sondheim play.
Which ran for like
no
a week or something, right?
No one realized this woman had such charisma and such singing ability. So she was really a revelation. She just took Broadway by storm, which is one of the reasons, I'm sure, why she won the Tony that year for Best Actress. But yeah, when you think of Angela Lansbury today, you don't think of her as a musical comedy star, but she has four Tonys to her credit.
Right.
She's huge.
Yeah. Some of the other performers who played Mame, either the play or the musical.
Oh my gosh, there was almost every major
actress of a certain age.
Yeah, I mean Greer Garson. I don't know if you would even remember her, but she was a beautiful star. And Beatrice Lilly, Celeste Holm, Ann Miller, of course. God, who else might you know? Well, Gypsy Rose Lee, to mention.
Right.
Gypsy.
Yeah.
Susan Hayward, and just recently I saw a production at the Hollywood Bowl with Michelle Lee.
So it's the Knott's Landing woman, right?
I'm sorry?
The Knott's Landing woman?
The Knott's Landing woman, indeed. And you may not think of her as a great Broadway star, but she is incredible. I mean, she started out on Broadway as she can sing like no one else.
So, but you say in the conclusion of the book that it really is Rosalind Russell's part and Angela Lansbury's part. None of these other understudies or fill-ins never were up to the task of...
That's really kind of how I feel, because I didn't have the opportunity to see Roz Russell. It was way before my time. And I understand that Eve Arden, when she performed the role on the road, was absolutely magnificent, as was Greer Garson, who took over for Roz Russell on Broadway. But still, when you see the motion picture, Auntie Mame, the comedy with Roz, you can't imagine anyone else in that role. I mean, I've seen the film hundreds of times, and I find something different each time I view it, a nuance that I hadn't seen before. And it's her role. Yes, I would like to have someone remake the musical, because Lucille Ball was really not up to it, as to put it kindly, as you did a moment ago. But I would never want anyone to remake the comedy version. It really is Ros Ruffel's classic masterpiece, and I can't think of anyone who could really do that role the way she did it. It was just, you know, why try to remake something that's already perfect?
Let's talk about the Lucille Ball film. It was 1974, and you write in your book, her own brittle, unappealing performance, perhaps lacking in warmth, color, and substance, contributed to the film's failure. MAME, the movie, starring Lucille Ball, now that was not a big hit, was it? Or?
No, it was a huge bomb, in fact.
Both critically and financially?
Critically and financially. It was just a disaster, and it pretty much ruined Lucille Ball's career for a while, quite honestly. I mean, the reviews were horrendous. They destroyed her. They almost, it seemed, took special aim at her rather than the film, and it seems rather unfair. I must say, my first introduction to the main character was seeing the film when I was a kid. I saw her in the theater and loved it because I had no other reference. I had not seen the Ros Ruffel version, and you know, who can argue with Jerry Lawrence's music? It was wonderful. So I enjoyed the film enormously until I saw Ros Ruffel's comedy classic.
And let's talk about the musical now, MAME the musical. How does that stand up compared to other musicals?
I think it stands up beautifully. As I said a moment ago, I saw a production just last month at the Hollywood Bowl, and it was just enormous fun. You can't go wrong with the music. Jerry Herman's music is timeless. It's a wonderful score, and it's very difficult not to have a success with it.
Right. Now, what are some of the songs for you that sort of the epitome of the MAME character from the Jerry Herman score?
Well, certainly the title song, MAME. I mean, that's such a rousing number. It's fantastic. But then there's, you know, like We Need a Little Christmas, and If You Walked Into My Life. They're all just wonderful songs, you know, sung with a great deal of warmth and or, you know, hilarity. It's just a great score.
People tend to remember Hello Dolly more than MAME. Is that a sort of true assumption, or?
Oh, I don't know about that. No, Hello Dolly, of course, is still, you know, a favorite of most theatergoers. But I don't know. I think MAME might even eclipse Dolly. You know, in many people's minds of what is among their favorite Jerry Herman musicals, at least.
You know, I find it really odd. You said that the score is timeless, and I agree with you. However, what we tend to forget is that the era in which this story took place was in the 20s, the 30s, the Depression era.
Right.
Why do you think that resonates, and why do you think that continued? People still produce revivals of it on.
Oh, like, yeah, there's a production almost every day somewhere, whether it's a high school production or a professional stage production. I think the reason why it so resonates is because we can all relate to this character, this main character who goes through so many different problems throughout the show. I mean, she's in one moment she's a wealthy dilettante, and the next she's destroyed by the Great Depression, but she's a survivor, and she continues. And the music reflects that. The music is very upbeat, and Jerry Herman's music, generally anyway, is filled with hope. And I think that's basically what this character gives to audiences, and that's a sense of hope.
We're talking with Richard Tyler Jordan, the author of But Darling, I'm Your Auntie MAME. It's published by Kensington, $20 Canadian, $14 American. Some of the other performers that we were talking about, that they want to produce this again, and as a musical, as a movie again, to sort of replace the Lucille Ball fiasco. Who are some of the names that have been floated around?
Well, they were trying to do a television adaptation of the musical MAME. For years, they've been trying to get this they've gone through, oh, everyone from, oh, they thought of Cher, of course, was a big one.
That's the last name that I've heard. It was Barbra Streisand for a few years.
I read the script that Peter Toland wrote for Barbra, and it's brilliant. I really wish they would do that. And I think Barbra could do it. But Bette Midler was another name. She was the big name that was brought up for a television adaptation of Mame years ago. And it was only because of...
She did Gypsy, right?
Yeah, she did Gypsy, which I thought she did marvelously. And I think she could do it, or Mame, I should say, the musical. So it seems like it's a project that anyone would kill to do. Mm-hmm. But they just, for some reason, they have not been able to get a TV adaptation going.
And is that the same as well with the version of the play, the anti-Mame work? In your book, you write Whoopi Goldberg, Goldie Hawn. Those are some of the names that have been mentioned for that. Is that production still a go, or are they still trying to make that?
That's not. About a decade ago, they were considering redoing anti-Mame, the comedy. And in fact, I read the script that was written for Goldie Hawn, and it was completely updated to the 60s. And as well written as it was, I just don't think it really worked for the present time. Goldie Hawn, I just don't see her as an anti-Mame. Yeah, she's got this wacky persona, etc. But I just don't think she's right. And I think, quite honestly, when it came time for her to decide, yes, I want to do this, or no, I don't want to do it, she probably was thinking of how she would be compared to Rosalind Russell. And at that stage in Goldie's career, she probably really didn't want to have to face critics who would associate that character with Roz and compare her to Roz.
So what are the chances, then, of seeing the Cher version? Is that...
I think it's a dead issue now, quite honestly. It's too bad, but I think that the next time we see Mame, the musical, will be on Broadway. I'm sure there'll be another revival. In fact, it's my understanding that Jerry Herman has agreed to have three of his biggest hits, Hello Dolly, La Cage aux Folles, and Mame, produced on Broadway for the next few seasons.
I read in the New York Post last night that La Cage aux Folles was headed for Broadway this fall with Roger Barton, Daniel, the guy who played the butler on The Nanny. I forget his name.
Oh, right, yeah, he was so good. I can't think of his name either, but sounds like a very good cast. So I think the next time we see Mame, it will be on Broadway.
Starring whom?
Oh, God, I have my wish list. I'd love to see Emma Thompson do it. I think she's just, she's incredible. Now, I think she's kind of forgotten, even though she shouldn't be. But I can't imagine too many people who would have the same kind of warmth that Angela Lansbury gave to the character. That was the problem, she always said, with Lucille Ball, that there was just no warmth in the character.
Right.
And I think that's something that is lacking in a lot of names. It looks like a very easy role to do, but it's really a very difficult role to perform.
We mentioned Donna Murphy at the top, and she possibly could be.
She'd be great. I love Donna Murphy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Richard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Joseph. I've had a great time.
I read about the book. I must have been, I guess, in Liz Smith's column, or Cindy Adams even, or page 6 in the New York Post, and called your, I faxed a request to your publisher, and they very kindly sent a book, and I read it last spring, and I reread it again last month, and so when we were planning to get guests on this segment, we decided to call you and plan it. It's a very good book. It's entertaining, and it's quite engrossing, and it's interesting.
Well, thank you very much. I had a lot of fun writing it. It was a labor of love book. It was something that I wrote while, of course, I'm still at Disney. So this was my part-time job, writing this book. While
you also write novels, don't you? Do you not?
Yeah, I write novels under the name Ben Tyler.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a busy guy.
Right.
Never home.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, and I appreciate it, and congratulations on this book.
Thank you, Justin.
From his home in Los Angeles, that was Richard Tyler Jordan, the author of But Darling, I'm Your Anti-Mame, published by Kensington, $20 Canadian, $14 American. The segment was produced by yours truly with Richie Leung and Vishal Durr. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plana.